So wanted to provide some updates overall, where we are in the transition from kind of the emergency and response phase into the longer-term recovery phase. Just some overall numbers on the state side. We have about 1,800 individuals that have registered for the state individual assistance program. We are asking everybody in the area to apply both the state individual assistance program and the FEMA individual assistance program. There are a couple of, in particular, one specific item that FEMA cannot cover for individuals that were affected by this disaster, and it has to do with their subsistence camps. So FEMA and the state's programs are very complementary. We can support, and FEMA can support, the replacement of transportation, home machines, four-wheelers, fish wheels, fish nets, rifles, ammunition. All of those kind of things are eligible under the FEMA program, coordinated with the state. But the one thing that is not is the real property, if you will, the cabin structures themselves. So it's important that the survivors around the impact area that do subsistence activities register with the state of Alaska and FEMA. FEMA can cover most things. The state of Alaska can cover the cost to replace the cabin structure itself. Maybe not totally, but there is financial assistance available above and beyond what FEMA can do. And we're encouraging folks to register now because many individuals aren't home. They're displaced in Anchorage and other parts of the state. But many of them have not had a chance to access where their traditional subsistence sites are. So you register today and discover damages or destruction of subsistence areas, equipment and cabins in the spring, we can support that if folks register now. So that's really our primary message, that we want to make sure that we continue to share with everybody in the region to make sure that they're registering for assistance. So the state has about 2,000 folks registered today. We just issued our first payment for a subsistence camp structure just yesterday. So it was about $17,000 to a survivor to help them replace their real property that was destroyed in the storm. So on the Anchorage end, we still have over 600 individuals housed in our non-congregate sheltering program. So they're in hotels today. We are working this week to start the transition of all of those displaced survivors out of hotels and into longer term temporary housing. So that coordination is happening. We intend to kick that off starting this week to really depopulate those hotels and get folks into better accommodations for the winter, especially those that aren't going to be able to return home. So well, over 650 individuals, 170 or so households that we are still supporting here in Anchorage and in other areas of the state. We have some folks up in Fairbanks this week that are working to get folks registered into our programs that were displaced and chose to relocate to Anchorage or to Fairbanks temporarily. So that work is going on in the region, in the communities, and out of Bethel specifically. We have transitioned from all of that emergency repair work that we were doing on individuals' homes. So folks like the Alaska National Guard and the Alaska State Defense Force, the Division of Forestry, Team Rubicon are all out of the area. They have completed the work assignments that they had to do, temporary repairs and emergency winterization. And at the request of ABCP and the Regional Housing Authority and other folks in the region, we are stopping that work on temporary repairs and emergency winterization. And that's really to maximize FEMA benefits to individual house homeowners as they look to do repairs or rebuilding of homes that were damaged or destroyed come the summer build season, I'll call it that. So that's kind of a significant transition from the housing repair work that we were doing in communities impacted by the storms. Moving forward, there's going to be continued infrastructure repair work in most of the communities, and that's in partnership with the owners of those facilities, the utility companies, the Alaska Department of Transportation, public facilities, and ABCP and the Housing Authority, like AHC and others, to make sure that the infrastructure gets permanently repaired. So there's still going to be a lot of work going on in the community over the winter on the infrastructure side, and we will be spending the majority of the next couple of months planning on how to support folks in getting home to their community. That's really where we are kind of in the life cycle of this disaster. is the pause from that emergency response work that started the day after the storm passed, and looking more into strategic planning for the long-term recovery.
Can you say anything specific or new information about the long-term plans for housing?
So we do have, it's really about housing stock availability. So we have a substantial number of potential apartments of varying bedroom sizes in the Anchorage area for sure. We also have those available working with other regional housing authorities across the state and other potential commercial providers, really statewide. So as we're looking at transitioning folks out of, if they're living with friends and family in Bethel since the storm, or whether they're in our hotels in Anchorage, they really have a choice on where they want to winter over. So we're working on that transition right now to identify the needs of the folks, where they want to look at moving into apartments. A lot of kids have been enrolled in the Anchorage School District, so some families may wish to stay in Anchorage, others may wish to go elsewhere. And it's really based on the available rental stock statewide, if you will. So it's not limited to Anchorage. There is some housing stock available kind of statewide, and we'll be working individually kind of on a household-by-household basis to identify their wishes on where they'd like to enter over.
Was there anything else you wanted to include from the Department of Homeland Security side, the state side?
Sure. I think I want to share this, and we've shared this with the survivors in a couple of in-person kind of town halls in Anchorage. But for everybody, there is a question about community relocation that's out there. And I just want to share that the disaster programs that the state of Alaska and FEMA have don't completely relocate communities. So our intent, working hand in hand with the Housing Authority and ABCP and others, both on the infrastructure side for boardwalks and power plants and water treatment plants, landfills, sewage lagoons, as well as on the home side, it's our intent to identify as many opportunities to mitigate either the repair or rebuild of homes, or to mitigate and add resilience to infrastructure as we're repairing it, really to buy time for communities to have that longer-term conversation about potential relocation of the community in whole, if you will. So we're going to mitigate. We're going to do things like elevate homes that need to be rebuilt. We're going to look at improvements for hardening and making public infrastructure more resilient to buy that time for the communities to have that longer-term conversation about relocation.
Duke hasn't had a chance to speak, so would Duke like to introduce himself?
Yes, Evan. My name's Duke Davis. I am the federal coordinating officer. See, one of the key messages I want to say up front is please register. One of the lessons I've learned up here is our registration process is going to go on for about 60 days, and Brian was correct there that it'll close out in about 19 days on the 22nd of December. And I've bumped into situations in the past where people will approach me months later after our registration period is closed and they did not register. And the unfortunate circumstance, I'll use a member of the community I met out in the Pontiac early on, came up to me months later and said, I did not realize some of the damages that occurred out at my fish camp, and I never registered. And I bring that up as a cautionary note. Please register. If you get that registration ID, our program is going to go on for 18 months. So register with the state as well as FEMA. Get that FEMA registration ID. And if you come back 5, 6, 7 months later and find some damages that you weren't aware of or didn't claim initially, and you haven't reached your maximum on what we can do in terms of payouts, we're going to be able to address that all the way out to 18 months. And that's so critical. And we want to make sure that nobody gets left out on this. I will tell you the good report is that since we did get that presidential disaster declaration on the 22nd of October, the registration numbers have exceeded our expectations. We thought we were going to come in around 1,000 or 1,100. We're using a lot of geospatial imagery and data from a lot of different agencies to help in some of the estimates, and we thought we were going to come in around 1,250 on tops. So we're up over 1,550 registrations today. And we can typically get money in accounts very quickly. We have to do what's called an inspection to verify damages, and then we usually can get a payout within 24 to 72 hours after that inspection. And we've already got $27.2 million on the street, and money is flowing to the point where we're seeing $1 million every 2 or 3 days in terms of the numbers going up. And we're going to see that number go up quite a bit yet, because we still have about 400 inspections to do to verify loss. And so, again, we're going to see that number continue to go up.
It would be incorrect to say there's any sort of cap on the level of FEMA disaster funding. It's kind of a, this is a dynamic thing.
It is dynamic. It's going to grow to tens, if not even hundreds of millions of dollars on this disaster. This is one of the largest disasters. I mean, the state evacuated two entire villages and hasn't been done before. So, I mean, this is a really big disaster. And so we'll see numbers continue to grow in terms of federal support for sure. And I wanted to share with you a good news story is we had an applicant who was issued a total of $62,000 essentially. It included what we call displacement assistance, serious needs assistance, and then some of the personal property that Brian discussed there that they've lost. And so we issued this money, but unfortunately, the bank account was closed and we didn't have the right correct mailing address. And so the call center reached out to that person, I want to say yesterday afternoon. This is a person out of Quigg. And we were able to clarify the bank account information and get the correct mailing address. And we've reissued that one, or we've reissued a statement up to headquarters to go ahead and review this and let's get the money back out for a resend out to this person so they can get the money. And so there's someone there that was, $62,000, that's a lot of money, was not going to the right location. And through that call center and that interaction with applicants, we can get those things corrected and get the monies going in the right place. And it is critical that we're seeing some amount of confusion or trouble with people being readily available, having their bank account information available during the registration process so that we can make sure to take care of quick payment. And they'll have the option of whether they want the money to go into a bank account or whether they want a check issued through the mail. You know, we're almost in a phasing type of approach to this, looking out over the horizon. You know, we're in a phase right now of registration and getting money out to folks and getting them into some kind of temporary structure where they can stabilize while some decisions are made how to restore the communities, things along that lines. I will tell you right now, it's very normal at this stage in the delivery for people to have a lot of questions about getting money. How do I use this money? Different questions about their particular case on why did I get a certain amount? I should get more. And that's really what our call center specializes in. Once we get into this phase, which Brian's discussing there, making a decision about what the future on home repair and construction or different things like that will look like, we'll go into a phase where we will do another, high intensity kind of information and getting out and speaking with people and doing question and answer to answer those types of questions. I hope that makes sense. I'll pass it back over to you, Evan.
Well, would that require you to continue extending the disaster declaration?
On the federal side?
The disaster declaration does not need to be extended. Our individual assistance program will go for 18 months, and we're up here to follow through and make sure these things that we've been discussing are followed through and delivered the best we can.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of mischaracterized that. And that's why that December 22nd deadline on the federal side is so important, and also the January 8th for the state. Because those, once you're registered, I mean, it's extending out 18 months on the federal side, and it's all, is there also an 18-month component on the state side? I'm sorry if I missed that.
Yeah, we really don't have a time frame on our programs. They're kind of the sequence of delivery. Once folks have exhausted their FEMA benefit, and for example, my specific example is that funding that could be available to replace real property at subsistence sites, that may come after kind of the individuals are all said and done with FEMA. So our assistance will be available until it's been exhausted, essentially. And then on the infrastructure side, that typically goes on years and years and years. We're still doing work on Typhoon Murbach repairs on the infrastructure side in some communities. So it's certainly a long-term proposition.
Well, and then for Duke on the FEMA side of things, how long do you expect, or is FEMA prepared to be involved in the recovery further beyond that 18 months?
It's not atypical for the state to ask for an extension. on certain types of our programs, and every one of those requests will be reviewed. But I will tell you, many of them get approved, and it happens not uncommonly. So it could go on beyond 18 months. I can't say definitive. I don't know. It'll be one of those it depends answer on what the state asks for and the decision making on extended beyond that 18 months.
Great. And then the other question I definitely wanted to ask, is there any new information you can share about the possibility of this 100% federal cost share between FEMA and the state of Alaska?
So this is Brian. I will say, you know, obviously the governor did ask for 100% cost share for the first 90 days of this disaster. And unfortunately, it is still under review with the federal government. So we don't have a satisfactory answer there. I was just talking to some folks this morning about that request. We're certainly expecting to get an answer on that. And from the state's perspective, sooner the better.